This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Saturday Magazine, sponsored by Velocity Rewards,
your award-winning loyalty program for Virgin Australia's frequent flyers.
Saturday Magazine, every Saturday from 10 until noon on Joy 94.9.
Melbourne Fringe is a really, really important part of Melbourne's cultural life. And an interesting component of that is Gone Girls. And if you're interested in, you know, the drag spirits of Julie Bishop and Julia Gillard, then perhaps this is something you should go and see. And we're joined by... And I'm going to my crack at pronouncing the names. Patrick Livesey.
Yeah, pretty much.
And Esther Miles.
Yeah,
bang. I got to say, Ange is a Julia Gillard tragic. So I'm going to let Ange lead off.
Okay, I am. It's true. I am a fan of Julia Gillard and was very fortunate to spend quality time with her a few times
jealous.
In my previous role. Jealous?
Very
yeah,
jealous.
Yeah, yeah.
Green with envy.
Yeah, okay. My previous work was around education, basically, and questioning the education
that's
system. That's her big thing. And I found her to be an incredibly open-minded politician about what the role of education was and very passionate, like really, really passionate about good education. And I know she now currently works on a global education project with the UN as well. So she walks the talk, so to speak.
Yeah, she's pretty incredible.
Yeah.
She was Prime Minister when I was in Year 10, Year 10 through to Year 12 and the year after. And that was kind of the time that I was coming into my political awareness. And I had this amazing social studies teacher who was a diehard Julia Gillard fan.
Right.
And so we'd often talk about Julia Gillard's prime ministership and the treatment of her in the media, especially in The Advertiser, which is like the Herald Sun equivalent in Adelaide.
Yes.
And it was the first time I remember thinking, like, you know, this is... Can I swear?
Yes.
This is bullshit.
Yes.
Like, this is not what's happening. This is not the truth about what she's doing and what her prime ministership is about. And so I think that was the motivation for this show, is that, like, I think ever since then I've had this need to kind of, like, prove that wrong and to kind of remind people that, you know, as much as she is defined by the misogyny speech, and that was a huge exciting moment, she was also the most productive prime minister we've ever had.
Well,
and that's not remembered. Like, she got so much done in her time.
That's her record, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, the number of legislative changes or pieces that she put through was a record.
Yeah.
An incredible negotiator. And even, like, negotiating, like, into the hung parliament and stuff, that process was just, like, grueling, and she just kind of...
Like, came alive in that, like, 2 week hung parliament period, and everyone was scattered, and Julia, because I read her book, and she was just like
running around everywhere.
Yeah.
she had a minority government, so she had to be the, you know, the ultimate negotiator, and I think she did that incredibly well.
Yeah.
But she had so much pressure on her, being Australia's first female prime minister, coming off the back of a mutiny and a coup, basically. And, you know, you probably remember the publicity around the Kevin 07 campaign was massive at the time. So, you know, it went from one high right to a lull, and then, you know, back to somebody who effectively had a poison chalice in some ways.
There was no chance that she was ever going to come out of that.
Yeah.
Fine. Like, it was just, people were, I think, so resentful because the hope of Kevin 07 was so extreme.
Mm, absolutely.
And then the
Yeah, like, it was never explained. Oh, I mean, it was, but, you know, to the mass public, it wasn't fully explained why it was happening.
Mm. Yes.
And then I think it was so convenient to just be like, oh, there's this woman who's gone and ruined everything.
Mm.
And everyone, there was such hatred towards her.
Yeah.
And I think it kind of shocked all of Australia how not ready they were for a woman to be in charge.
And she says it. She says, like, the biggest mistake I made was thinking that the best thing to do was to breeze over it and to go, like, okay, we've got to get to business. It doesn't matter why I did this. It matters that now we've got a plan. And it's like, actually, she should have made it clear that things were falling apart.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It was very difficult, though, for her, because what wasn't publicly known was Kevin Rudd's operating style as a prime minister.
Yeah.
That was never shared publicly.
Kevin was once described to me as, you know, that little chocolate toy Kinder Surprise. You open it up and it's a rotten egg.
Okay. Well, all right.
There's a bit of that in the show.
Yeah. Right. I do know from some of his key ministers of the time that he was pretty demanding and made a lot of decisions himself, and the captain's call, as it's now came to be known. And the thing is, there must be democracy.
That's not leadership.
And it's not the system we have in Australia. We're lucky we don't have a presidential system. Yep. It's not about one person. One person can't hold that much power. It's not good for them.
I think the other piece too, which you guys no doubt, I'm going to throw to you in one sec, but is, you know, the way she came into power is not known publicly around the manipulation and people within the party who made that happen. Oh, yeah. We're becoming a bit more savvy as a community, that we understand that there are people behind the scenes that you never get to know about.
It doesn't just happen.
Yeah.
They don't walk down the into the ministerial wing and go, oh, actually, I think I might challenge to be leader and prime minister today.
Feel like a good day for it.
Yeah, exactly.
It takes a lot of planning and a lot of
plot. Puppetry.
And a lot of, like, you know, that had been coming for a while. Yep. You know, those, I think it was... Mark Abib.
Yes.
You know, him and that kind of team, they'd been plodding away for a little bit, trying to figure out, okay, this seems to be falling apart. What are our options here?
I guess we sort of see one name, you know, one political name, Labor, Liberal, Greens, whatever, and we assume they are a very united group of human beings working together and know each other very well. And in fact, they come from all around our country, all different diverse backgrounds and ambitions and agendas. And
desires for what that party is meant to be.
Yeah,
I mean, like Julie Bishop describes the Liberal Party as a broad church, and I think it's just as true of the Labor Party. Mm. There's very different values.
Yeah.
That they're all kind of
I mean,
pushing.
All political parties are a broad church.
Yeah.
Sometimes I think they need an exorcist, though.
Nice one.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So Julie Bishop also is a fascinating character in a very different way to Julia Gillard.
Mm.
So how is Julie Bishop portrayed?
I'm quite a left-wing person, so approaching this character, I was determined to not... both of us were determined to not turn them into these kind of angels that had never done anything wrong or like were perfect leaders.
Sure.
But nor did we want to have this like Julie the angel and Julie the devil.
Because
you know, we're making work for Melbourne Fringe audiences. We weren't expecting to have people coming in and be challenged by the material. We knew we were going to be speaking to people that more or less agreed with our politics.
Right.
And so I was like, okay, well, how can we open up a conversation for that audience?
Yep.
Okay. And so trying to present two characters that were fully fleshed out and trying to take what had been projected of both of them and playing with that and having fun with that, because, you know, our media only has space for a small perception.
Yeah, the caricature.
Yeah.
Mm. And like for Julie Bishop, it's very much that kind of, you know, the minister of fashion. Like we've had this like running amusement about how across the board everyone in Australia seems to just like Julie Bishop a bit more because she's kind of basically hot. And it's like this like totally bizarre thing that should not factor in.
Yeah,
but it's like even people who are like very left wing, like everyone's kind of got to like, I mean, you know. There's something about Julie Bishop. Yeah. Like, what are you talking about? Like, you're not going out with her. She's a leader.
It's very true, isn't it? Yeah. And I think the softer media picked up on that, the magazines, you know, looking at her dresses and her clothes and whatever. My take on her was she's a very strong woman.
Yeah.
Very, very strong. And I think her portfolio of foreign minister, not an easy one whatsoever. You know, diplomacy is tricky, takes a lot of intelligence. You have to be articulate, but you also have to be quite savvy to the mood of the moment.
But, you know, it's interesting because, you know, she was deputy leader of the Liberal Party for how long? 9 years?
Yep.
Mm. Yeah.
And, might even be longer. Yeah. Foreign minister. And then, of course, you know, when the government and, you know, Malcolm Turnbull's prime ministership finally imploded, she stood... And none of her colleagues from Western Australia voted for her.
Yeah. Mm. No one.
I think she got 9 votes.
Yeah, she got hers and Malcolm's and then 9 others.
And, you know, so for her, that was, and for so many politicians, you know, the saying is, you know, today a rooster tomorrow, a feather duster. Mm.
But it just
lay a hen tomorrow, a feather duster. You know.
And it goes to show how powerful those, you know, behind the scenes workings are. Mm. Because I think for a lot of the public, she was the obvious choice. You know, for a lot of people that were kind of pining after those Labor years, they're like, well, at least Julie Bishop is an actual centre politician. Mm. Like, she's not pretending to be. Yep. She's very, very much centre in a way that nobody else at the time in the Liberal Party was.
She's very sensible centre as
and
well.
And so a lot of people were like, okay, well, cool, that's at least something we can try and negotiate with.
Yeah.
But then the right of the Liberal Party had a very, very different agenda.
Mm, they did. Mm. I think that I agree with you. I think there was a public sort of sadness around the demise of Julie Bishop because she'd been, you know, seen to be someone who was strong and representing Australia, and my politics is not her politics. But I still respected her from afar and thought, you know, she's a woman, great. Mm. Yeah. She's, you know, up the forefront of a Conservative Party of politics and she is hopefully representing Australia in a very positive light. And it seemed to be that she was, you know, she wasn't doing anything to damage our reputation or...
And I feel like that respect is what we need and what we're missing, you know, just the public towards the politicians, but politicians towards the public. Like, you have ScoMo saying all these awful things about, you know, left-leaning voters, and it's like, that's not your place to be judging people. That's a valid opinion, and you need to listen to it.
We've had an interesting morning covering topics such as freedom of the press and the judiciary and representation on the judiciary, but it's fascinating to me that in this last week, ScoMo has been saying to CEOs of large corporates, don't speak about social issues. You don't need to get involved.
We've got this covered.
We've got it covered. So don't worry, guys. Just be quiet. You just stay over there. Yeah. But by the way, we will mention you in the Religious Freedom Act, and you know, we'll bring you in on board there. But don't talk about any other social issues. Thanks very much. And don't come to the climate strike.
Which they did. And I can't remember who it was, but someone in the Liberal Party yesterday saying how much of a distraction it was, and couldn't this have been held in terms of yesterday's strikes? Couldn't this be held on a weekend so that people can go about their day? And it's like, come on.
What are you talking about?
Strikes are not held, you know, for everyone's convenience. Yeah. So, guys, how long does Gone Girls run for?
We've got eight more shows.
Eight shows, we're halfway,
We're at the halfway point. Our last show is on the 29th, so every night except Monday. Mm-hmm. 8:30 except Sunday, which is 7:30.
Trades Hall
in the archive room, which is it's the first time the Melbourne Fringe has been held in Trades Hall, and it's an amazing venue. It's like opened up the festival completely. There's so many more spaces and everyone's just hanging around, so it's a great atmosphere.
So you can come and see us and see everyone else as well, because there's so many shows on in Trades Hall. It's such a rabbit warren of theatre.
Now, I don't know if they've repaired it, but in the Council Hall there used to be bullet holes in the wall from the conscription debates during the First World War.
What?
Cool.
A few times guns were fired.
Wild.
Yeah, I think they might have patched them. They're still there?
Yeah.
I feel like that's something Trades would want to hold.
Yeah. I love Trades Hall. It's so good.
Either that or it was the shoppies union during the Labor split.
I'm wondering about that.
Well, look, thank you, guys.
Oh, thank you.
It sounds a really interesting show. Melbourne Fringe is an awesome festival. Only Melbourne could really put it on, to be honest. So, thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having us.
Good luck. Thanks, guys.
Cheers.
Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9, proudly sponsored by Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.